Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 10th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. And we send our best wishes to Mariah Tinker and her little baby, who's got a terrible earache. We look forward to having her back soon. So, D.R., the weather forecast for the last several days is leading up to a, I don't know what the right word is, the Big Bang. Hurricane Irma looks like it is training its sights on South Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Hurricane Irma is quite a to-do. Interestingly enough, behind Irma is a hurricane called, well, soon to be a hurricane called Jose, and behind mm-hmm. that is a hurricane, is a tropical storm called Katia. So mm-hmm. we have three potentially significant storms heading the United States way just after we are still dealing with the aftermath of our friend Harvey. Right? Mm-hmm. Man, I guess there's a lot to unpack there, DR. So tell me, how should I think about this?
Well, you know, to put a twist on the famous line from Schoolhouse Rock, three is the tragic number in this case, because you have Irma, which is already recognized as the most powerful Atlantic Ocean hurricane in recorded history. You have Jose and Katia, which are perceived to be less powerful, but you know, again, with the warming oceans mm-hmm. giving these storms so much power, who knows how powerful they'll get, and. Just to think of the horror in terms of economic damage that these storms are going to inflict upon all the regions, not just the United States, but all the regions these storms will hit. Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Haiti, just, you know, in an unthinkable amount of economic damage, an unthinkable amount of aid that's going to have to be provided to all of these countries and all of these regions. And again, we discussed recently, you know, Tom Hartman's theory that extreme weather could cause such economic havoc that it could lead to a depression or a recession or some kind of, you know, economic cataclysm. I mean, maybe we're not close to that, but again, when you see storm after storm after storm, and as emissions keep rising and keep rising, these storms are going to keep on coming. We go back to, you know, the term 350, we have to get down to 350 degrees. If we don't get down to 350 degrees, these storms are going to hit with the power of a 357.
Well, it's funny because it's not funny, but we're just exactly in the situation we discussed a couple of weeks ago of saying, you know, you've got something like $120 billion bill come due in Houston. And if Hurricane Irma does something comparable in Miami, now you're up to $250 billion for two storms, right? Mm-hmm. If we were to spend $250 billion on clean energy, you know, we'd be a little bit farther along than we are now, right? Mm-hmm. But tell me, D.R., you had a piece, that you, I think, in the Washington Monthly. So you, D.R., dear friends, writes a blog for the Washington Monthly magazine. And what was in that, D.R.? You had an analogy that I think is useful for people to hear.
Yes, my argument was that Harvey has inflicted upon the country the same sort of shock that 9/11 did, and it's going to force a change in the conversation, because at this point, you know, people can no longer make excuses of, oh, it's in the future, or oh, it's just going to affect people, you know, polar bears, oh, it's just going to affect people overseas. Now it's affecting the very constituencies of the politicians that run around denying the science. So that's going to force, not all the politicians, I don't think it's going to change Trump's mind mm-hmm. or Scott Pruitt's mind, but there are going to be more and more politicians who realize that more and more people are smartening up and realizing, hey, wait a minute, this is not normal. This is not natural. This is not an act of God. This is an act of us, and we need to take action.
Well, it's funny. I think that I have perceived a little bit for some reason, a more hopeful shift in the discussion after this Hurricane Harvey than even after Hurricane Sandy. It seems like there's just a given that this is, you know, that various news articles, more than you would expect, are just saying, get used to it. This is what it is, and it's going to get worse. Do you have do you have that feeling that the general tone of discussion has shifted a little bit towards saying that this is a credible threat?
Well, the comparison I made to was the whole discussion that we used to have about drugs in this country. You know, when we used to talk about, you know, the crack epidemic and the heroin epidemic, you know, people would dismiss it as, oh, it's happening in other communities. But when we talk about the opiate crisis, now it's happening in everybody's community. You can't divide it between us and them. The same dynamic is happening with climate. People can't just say, oh, it's happening in New Orleans, I don't have to worry about it. Oh, it's happening in New York, I don't have to worry about it. Now it's hitting the heartland. Now it's hitting home. Now there's no escape. And once there is no escape, everybody, or at least the majority, has to come together and demand action.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I guess we should all be sensitive in listening for changes in tone of various kinds of reportage. I guess I was listening to On Point today with Tom Ashbrook on WBUR, I think, and I think that goes nationwide. But I mean, he was talking about, you know, a Green New Deal, right? How are we going to build a future? And he had an academic on who was talking about, you know, a program to basically reproduce New Deal kind of, you know, 1930s New Deal stuff with green energy. But at the same time, he had this guy from the George Bush Memorial Library down in Texas who monopolized the conversation with this sort of problem of soft talking about, you know, it's not really that big a threat, and, oh, look, we've got natural gas, that's renewable energy, and we all need to work together and not get too upset. And I was ended up screaming at the radio, because, I mean, Tom Ashbrook usually does a pretty good job, but it just was upsetting to invite this guy in whose sole purpose was to, you know, douse any passion or any recognition that climate change is a real issue. Having said
I actually stopped listening to that segment when I heard the George W. Bush library representative mention fracked gas as a renewable resource, and I thought to myself, you know, the irony that George W. Bush, lest we forget, you know, before he totally sold out to Dick Cheney's energy vision, George W. Bush, when he was governor of Texas, did a lot of promotion of wind. And somehow I'm predicting that representative of his library didn't mention that because it was inconvenient to the narrative. He still wants to push sounding like a Baghdad Bob when he has to know, and if he does not know, he's completely ignorant that the winds, so to speak, are changing.
Well, and I turned it off too. I just could not abide listening to it. It was just so dear listener, if you want to have your bile raised, listen to that Tom Ashbrook show. But I guess my initial point, despite this flunky from the Bush Museum, was that the topic of discussion was, how do we build a future? And I think that Tom Ashbrook's sensibilities is such that he wants to have a concrete discussion about how do you deal with the future. But he had this joker on that I was very unhappy with. So anyway, there you go. Tell me the other question. If we go back for a moment to Hurricane Irma, which is packing now 185 mile an hour winds, and everyone has heard of Category 5 storms, and of course that comes from the what's called the
Saffir-Simpson scale.
Saffir-Simpson scale, which is basically two scientists got together and defined, you know, how do you rank hurricanes. And they basically said a Category 5 is greater than 175 miles an hour. So if you're a million miles an hour, you're still a Category 5. And the question is, should we redefine a new category to encompass storms like Irma, which are getting significantly higher wind speeds than even the maximum that was envisioned in the original hurricane scale?
Absolutely. There needs to be Category 6. We may end up with a Category 7 or 8 the way things are going, because, again, and Joe Room hinted at this in a piece for Climate Progress, you know, Category 5 does not encompass the level of devastation that these storms are inflicting, I think you can make a good argument that Harvey should be beyond a Category 5. I think you should go. You can make a compelling argument that Katrina should have been considered beyond a Category 5, mm-hmm. considering the amount of devastation that caused. And again, you know, as these extreme weather events, as these hurricanes continue to gain more power and more power and more power, like a climate colossus, basically, you're going to have a completely new category of categorizing these storms and categorizing the amount of damage they're inflicting upon this country, upon this world.
I mean, I think the counter argument that the Joe Rome article made was that, you know, once you get to a Category 5, people already know it's destructive. So this Category 6 doesn't carry that much more information. But what I heard, so it was not in that article, I don't know where the link is, but I heard that there is now proposed a new rating scale, which is essentially a damage index that would take into account not just the wind speed, because this Saffir-Simpson scale just measures top wind speed, right, which of course is sort of very damaging. But Harvey was incredibly damaging because it was moving slow and it had a lot of rain in addition to the high wind. So there's three or four factors you can multiply together to get a damage index, which may be, you know, might sort out some of these storms, as you said, like Katrina, you know, was Category 5 high wind speed, but if, depending on how fast it's moving and how much rain it's going to dump, those, and probably, I mean, if I was going to, I have a fourth category, is that the scale of the storm, the damage index should shift depending on what part of the world it's going to hit. Right? If a storm's heading into Miami, it's going to be a whole lot more damaging than if it's headed into, you know, a rural part of the eastern seaboard.
Maybe it would be easier for people to visualize this if we borrowed from the MPAA rating system, rate storms G, PG, PG-13, R, or NC-17. And Irma is definitely an NC-17 rated storm.
Yeah, I think we should name them after climate deniers, with the biggest dopes being the most damaging storms.
It's Hurricane Truett is about to hit.
It's a real Trumper coming into Miami. Oh God! Well, there you go. Yeah, there's lots of stuff going on, but I just don't want to gloss over the fact that if the damage from Irma is comparable to the damage from Houston, the United States will, as it should, try and pick up the damage and help those people. But we're talking about significant fractions of $1 trillion to pay. And even if you make the argument that only 10% of the damage in these two hurricanes is due to the extra assist of climate, right? Because you're going to have hurricanes, right? There's going to be hurricanes, blah, blah, blah. They're going to come, right? But if even 10% of that is due to the fact that we've put so much carbon in the air, you're talking about $30 billion of money that should probably have been put into clean energy research and clean energy infrastructure. And you ask yourself, how are we spending our money? Right, we're going to put money into these to rebuild these places, but then pretend that it's a quote-unquote natural disaster. There's another thing I saw that I probably can't find the link to, but I mean, that saying basically arguing that we should not call these things natural disasters. Because they're not natural. They're not unexpected. They're unnatural. They're human engineered in many ways, and we can predict them. So, like, who's surprised when a hurricane comes? Nobody's surprised when a hurricane comes. They're going to happen. So to somehow say that this is an act of God is deliberate self-deception. Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. I was also going to suggest, you know, could we be looking at going back to the Tom Hartmann argument about, you know, these storms being so severe that they start inflicting a severe, almost recession or depression level economic impact? Do we have to start talking about possibly a TARP in the aftermath of these storms, like literally a massive bailout for all the homes and businesses that were destroyed by Harvey and Irma, along the lines of the Troubled Asset Relief Program from 2008? Do we have to seriously start thinking about that?
I think that's what we're doing. I think that we're going to do half. I mean, I keep I'm adding in potential damage from Irma that we don't know about yet. But I mean, that's going to be half of the TARP that, you know, the recovery from the financial crisis, right? It was $750 billion we spent then. Now we're going to pull, you know, roughly 100 $200, $300 billion out of the air and use it to rebuild things, I mean, it's a lot of money. And it's going to come from somewhere. And it probably and it easily could inflict economic consequences on the country, right? And the question is, comes at what point does the United States say no mas, right? And another storm comes and say, hey, you're on your own. I can't help you. There's just no money left in the till.
Then it becomes something. What was that old John Ritter movie about the country literally having to hold a telethon to basically prevent itself from going under financially? Something along those lines.
I think we could do that big league way.
Yeah.
So let me just say that one other sort of interesting thing that popped up this past week was the idea, given, you know, talking about spending $300 billion to rebuild Houston and potentially Miami, here in Boston, there are some proposals floating around about us building a seawall across the entrance to Boston Harbor. There was a report on WBUR. They are having regular reports through the course of the summer on climate change and its impact here in Boston. And they were talking about $30 or $40 billion to build a seawall. I mean, the biggest proposed seawall, which is an awful lot of money. But they say we need to do that or else downtown Boston is going to become the equivalent of Venice. We have canals instead of streets. Did you see that? Did you listen to any of that, dear?
Yes, and I think that money would obviously be you know borrowed or what have you. It would be money well spent because think of the economic impact of a Harvey or a Katrina like storm in Boston with all the businesses you know all the financial and all the high tech and all the colleges and all the economic development that is in the greater Boston area. If that gets damaged severely by an extreme weather event, I mean, that could be far, far worse in terms of economic damage than whatever it costs to build a seawall. So I think it's the idea of, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And, the people who would be opposed to this, would it be the sort of people who know the price of everything and the value of nothing, so to speak?
Well, I guess, I'm thinking that there has to be a cheaper way to absorb those floods naturally through, just in the same way that Houston has plowed over or cemented over all of its drainage systems, in the prairies. Boston should aggressively somehow build up marsh stuff so that we can absorb some of that water. Because, it raises all the other questions. If you say, I'm going to spend $30 billion to build a seawall across Boston Harbor, wouldn't that $30 billion be better spent mitigating, reducing carbon, protecting people around the world instead of just sort of making sure that the statue of John Harvard doesn't get rusty over in Cambridge, right? Get seawater around his feet or anything. I don't know. Exactly. I mean, $40 billion is a lot of money. Especially, it highlights the distinction between adaptation, which is incredibly expensive and protects maybe valuable resources such as Boston, but denies coverage to all the other people. I mean, even in Boston, if you're living in Plymouth, you're going to get the flood, right? And you're screwed. We're all going to spend $40 billion to protect Boston. You can imagine the kind of political conflicts that are going to come on that, right?
As the old saying goes, it's about who gets the gold mine and who gets the shaft.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. And we're running out of time, DR, but let me just say that our friends at the EPA have continued their dismally abusive and corrosive activities by attacking journalists, appointing buffoons and fools to important posts. And in fact, NASA is now evidently going to be headed by some guy who, I don't know, Bryden, what's his name? Bridenstine?
Bridenstine.
And what, was he a equestrian trainer or something in a past life?
He's apparently Jim Inhofe's brother from another mother, and who back in 2013 wanted Obama to apologize for spending money and trying to take action on climate change, and lied and claimed that climate change somehow stopped in 2003. I guess he got his talking points messed up. The denier talking point was that it stopped in 1998. He said it stopped in 2003. So it's like, so you talk about being, the mixed up files, basically. He doesn't even know his own talking points. And yet this is the guy who's apparently tapped to run the run NASA.
NASA. He's the guy who's going to be in charge of NASA, the agency that put a man on the moon, and we're going to have this sort of buffoonery. So, just one more reason to prepare for the 2018 congressional elections. Right? We will remember then. All right, DR, let me just remind folks that there is on the 13th, in a couple of days, Mariah will have her book discussion at the Trident Cafe in Boston. We'll put up a link to it. Go there, buy a ticket at the MCAN raffle. On the 19th of September, Tuesday the 19th, you'll be able to go to the State House and lobby your state representative to insist on more clean energy be used in Massachusetts. It's a great opportunity. Tuesday the 19th at around noontime at the State House. And on the 25th of September, if you're down on the Outer Cape near the town of Wellfleet, there'll be a bunch of towns are getting together to discuss how they can fight climate change out on the Outer Cape. It's a good time will be had by all. Mm-hmm. So, DR, let me just say that we'll put up a link to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction, right? And from there, you can share us with all your friends so they can learn about climate change too, and you can listen to this episode. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, a bunch of other directories. You can also find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you all again, guys, soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.